This is episode 354 of the Gold Squadron podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Will, calling the macro, Heglund. And tonight, I'm joined by Marcel. When do we sleep? Manzano.
It feels like I haven't slept since Worlds. It's been a good time, but I'm tired.
Ryan, I swear I didn't just write this. Stan Zuski.
No, I totally wasn't just knee-deep in, like, the rest of the show notes trying to get a bunch of compiled lists, data, etc. together and just forgot that I had a nickname in the middle to still fill in. I didn't do that at all.
No, I've... curtain has been... unveiled. For that. Speaking of behind the curtain, there's a group of people who really make GSP what it can be. The best of its ability, and that's the Patreons. Whether you're $2 a month up to our Grand Admirals, we love you so much. They're what gets GSP out to major events like Worlds, keeps the lights on, really keeps us going through their help. If you want to be able to support us, get unique channels on our Discord, shareable art from our past projects, you got to check out patreon.com/gold squadron. Now, I have a special exciting announcement to start this episode. Big headline here. We have ourselves a brand new leaked spoiler. Now, we don't normally do leaks, okay? But this one I'm really excited for.
I would like to say I was against this as normal, but
Have you seen this card, though? Let's just go to the card from the new Ewok Glider expansion. Chirpa makes his debut in Star Wars X-Wing. He's an Initiative 8 with only one attack dice, but he does have a 25-point cost, so maybe that'll factor into it. Has focus and lock, as you'd expect. No upgrades on his upgrade bar.
But not a lot to upgrade there with just those tiny wings.
I mean, it feels like not a lot to modify there, to be honest with you. Chirpa, as we researched, was the chieftain of the Ewok village. Has the ability, after you move through an enemy, roll two attack dice. Each enemy you move through takes all hits and crit results. So flies through him, drops the little rocks onto him. I think that's very thematic.
Yeah, it seems to be right out of the movie, right? You just like flow over the ATSTs, right? And drop the rock bombs on them. Right. Like it can't shoot, but it can seemingly drop bombs directly on enemies really well.
Well, at least Sherpa can. We'll have to see what the other pilots in the expansion are. But for now, I mean, this guy's looking pretty good. Gets like a bomb-like effect, an extra way to attack ships. So, I'm pretty excited. Like I said, had to reveal it.
I do wonder if like the other Ewok gliders won't get a shield, because like if Sherpa's supposed to be
the
chieftain, right? Like he gets the special one. All others is maybe like hull only for hull. Then, if we're to think about what the other ones could be,
two agility, maybe.
Yeah.
And then four home, sure. Could be interesting. We've seen that in the past, of course. So, like I said, I just had to get this out. Saw it floating around. So, had to let people know. Very excited for that Ewok Glider expansion. But, on to our main topic tonight. We are talking more Worlds breakdown. That's right. That's our intro. I gotta turn that off. When we cut back. Anyways. We are taking a look at more scum. We're gonna break it down. We're hoping to get some of the top players ever. It's amazing in Worlds, but some people who placed very high in the elimination rounds to come on, tell us their story, really give an insight into their faction and how to succeed in it. So right now, we're going to be trimming the fat this episode. The little bit of extras sprinkled in that didn't quite pull it off. And we are going to start with, of course, the only scum in this top 16. Old Para does it again in a stylish fashion with those painted ships. They are... Well, top 16. I was going to say what place they were. What place did Old Para get in Swiss?
In Swiss, he ended at... let's see. Because now it's like a reordered based upon the final positioning.
In the top 16.
Yeah. But they did end in the top 16. By the rest of his SOS tiebreaker with the other top 16 players, he finished 9th overall.
So that would be the top 16.
No, the final number, the second number next to it, is... Oh, no, you're right. Actually, yeah, because I'm seeing how it's read. We're looking at World Better here. So, actually, Old Para was 9th in Swiss because I'm seeing Illy, the eventual winner, was 14th in Swiss and eventually. So the left number is the bracket positioning. The right number is the Swiss number because Duncan Howard was 1 in the right number.
So 9th in Swiss, I mean, impressive to say the least. Unexpected results here from Scott.
We all talked about that, like, or at least I recall that most of us didn't even have Scum or Separatist in the top 16, and that if either of them did make top 16, we would have a decent discussion about it. And here we are. Old Para, it's all your fault.
It's all his fault. let's first here, I want to get this out of here so I can edit this faster. I want to first take a look at their list before we go too far here. I see that my page is cut off, so let's just move that out of the way. Maybe make it real big so everybody can see it here. All right, I'm messing with it too much now. All right, starting with called the Orange Klutz. This is Mandalorian with Razor Crest. Most likely always hidden false transponder codes. It's the most expensive one, and it's very valuable at I-5. So, we assume that's probably the only one he ever took, but not necessarily. Is there other options?
Overtune modulators. Yeah. Right? It's got a lot of red moves, and if you could overtune plus contraband. I mean, there's probably a good context to make is the reason why we're saying it's very likely to be false transponder and maybe overtune. Is because he's already equipped contraband as one of the other options.
Yes.
And you can't take 2 copies of contraband with Razor Crest.
You also can't take any uniques. So no cloaking device, no Babu. Probably not going to take feedback array. So, like, it starts dwindling down very quickly about which ones you can. Could always be the Tail Blaster. Yeah, I would catch somebody.
Could be a cargo shoot. You never know.
Could be. Unlikely, though, from a competitive standpoint. Though possible. And then, of course, the Contraband Cybernetics and the Child. Only 10 loadout. Everybody is dismissing Mandalorian for that abysmal loadout compared to what he had at 7 points. But you still get all the things you want. Good illicits and the Child. Of course, if you're not familiar with Mandalorian's ability, while you defend or perform an attack, if you are in multiple front arcs of enemy ships at range 1 to 2, 2 or more enemies, you may change one of your blanks to a focus result. So it doesn't add a focus, it converts one, more like broadside or advanced optics, if you will.
Pretty good ability when you have the Child around, who's basically 2 force that can't normally recharge it, but has built-in hate.
Yeah, so you imagine you roll either a blank and an evade, right? Or a blank and a focus. Either way, you're going to suffer a damage, get a new force, and then could potentially just use them for the next defenses. Very, very powerful. After the Q9 Mando, like, nerf, you just have Q9 with Mando and Child, which was, like, the most defensive ship, I think, and, like, as one complete package. Mandalorian ranks up there as one of the best, even though he doesn't even have Reinforce, which is a bit absurd.
You could argue he has better than Reinforce.
Yes, because he minimum
check it out, but
he always blocks a hit. He always puts an evade out to cancel your one attack die.
As long as he is in arc at range 1 to 2 of more than one ship.
Yeah, as long as he's proccing that ability. Well, joust. You know what I mean? Or just if they want to turn away from him, just target lock and tear it up. You know what I mean?
Mando's gonna go where most of the heat is. That's his job.
Alright. Speaking of heat, throwing some heat is Finn Rao. Of course, is it really a competitive scum list without Finn Rao? He's so good. Gets those extra dice at range 1 and has Concordia face off, so you get the evade result guaranteed at range 1. Though, well, Barnes built them a little bit differently. Mando, I think that could just be a standard loadout. But Finn Rao does have a lot of options. People between doing the slamming. What is that? I forget what exactly that's called. It's
Burnout thrusters.
Yeah. Burnout thrusters. You could go crack shot, predator, really lean into the bullseye. You could be doing Mandalorian optics. You could put advanced proton torpedoes on them and roll a 6-dice attack. There's a lot of things you can do with Finn Rao. Afterburners as well, very popular for him. But Old Para went clan training, Beskar, and shield. So two very defensive upgrades with Beskar and shield. And then clan training, to where if you don't need to reposition, you already got that range 1, you can throw down the target lock, which is arguably better than Predator, but it's kind of like a one-time use ability to acquire that lock, because you do need, it's a single charge, and then you do need to destroy a ship to get it back. Marcel, thoughts on this Finn Rao build?
I mean, it's probably the best. I'm trying to think what else you would do with Finn Rao.
I named off a bunch of them. No. You could do outmaneuver. Yeah, technically, you can do outmaneuver.
No,
a lot of people are focusing on the offense, and just everyone gets concerned about Finn Rao staying alive for 6 points. Well, Olpar is like, well, I found more ways to keep him alive. Just add shield upgrade.
Yeah.
Is clan training also jam protection? That you could say, become jammed, take a lock, and then still have a focus for defense?
I mean, it could be, but I think more than anything, it's there for... because you don't have any other way. You don't have Fearless. You don't have Crack Shot. You don't have Predator. You don't have any other way to modify your offense. That's, you know, if you just happen to land at range 1, now you can just target lock and get the target lock focus at range 1.
Sure.
So also pretty good for scenarios like scramble, if you want to press the button if someone's in front of you.
That is true. Okay. You could tow. You could scramble with clean training. I hadn't thought about it like that. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that it's only a one-time thing, for the most part.
Kill the thing in front of you, and then you get it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do shoot first in your list, though, but still, rolling 5 dice.
No, I think right now that's really what makes the most sense with so many other I-6 being able to outmaneuver you and shoot you from multiple angles. You've got the 3 initiative 6, the 3 I-6 at the Empire that are flying together, and you've just got so many other things that can just catch you off. And then, you know, if I flew Sunterfell, like, yeah, if Sunterfell could have like anti-crit in the front and 2 extra hull, you know, he'd be worth that extra point.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah, but Yeah, I think he built it the best way that you can right now with so many other ice-6, and just with only 4 ships, you've got to keep them alive. You can't be too aggressive with them because you don't have a lot of other. You have some other good tools, but you don't have like a ton of guns.
Yeah, there's that fine line between you gotta. He's somehow safest at range one, but you gotta make that commitment to dive in to range one to be safe, quote unquote safe. So, I would be interested. I wish we could determine how many games Finrao won or was still alive in at the end of it. I would have to assume most. I assume Mandalorian might be your big target. But maybe it's these other two Rogue class starfighters. So 6644, a classic build in Scum right now, if you're doing 4 ships. So the other two are Dirge, which is his reverse Bosk. That's all I know it as. He makes 2 hits, 1 crit. With other caveats.
If there's more defending, hits than shields. While you defend after neutralize results step, if there are more hit and crit results than your active shield, you may change one hit to a crit and cancel the other hit.
Right. So. Right. Normally, it's when they're out of shields, and it's not the initial attack on them. But
I mean, some initial attacks right now pretty commonly three well-modded 3 dice or 4 dice with proton torpedoes. So I mean,
that's fair.
You can do it off the rip pretty well.
I think the last time I fought a dirge, I threw a 3-hit proton torpedo into him.
Or not, yeah,
heavy or something. Either way,
it's common. I played against Dirge in like round 2 or something like that, or round 3, mm-hmm. And he is. It's very annoying. So I ended up shooting him with 3 ships and did 1 shield. Because he kept on using, you know, I would do 3 damage, and then he would cancel it, cancel 1, turn it into a crit, and then evade it 2 or something like that, right? To the point where he was taking 0 damage.
No, you can't take 0 damage.
That's not, that's a, you're, oh, then it's after neutralized
result. The
judge
came over, and the judge said, yeah, there is 0 damage.
No, because you still get a crit result.
Because this he is... said, Yeah, because there was 2 shields. I landed hit crit, and he converted
2
one of those hits to a crit.
Yeah, and so that's 2 crits.
Removed, and then removed a damage, so that left crit, but the crit were evaded.
No, this is what after neutralized result steps. So this should all be done after the evades are taken into account.
The judge might not have understood that. They might not have understood that defense dice.
I wonder if I won
even,
or lost that game. Good luck.
I can't. I can show it a little bit here on the stream, but it definitely says after neutralized results.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, so then, yes, the situation you are describing, that you could potentially, your first attack into Dirge could just knock off his shields, even though you thought it was a great attack. To me,
I shot him 3 times, and he used it, and I only knocked off 1 shield, and that 1 shield was from a plasma, because the judge ruled that he evaded everything, but the plasma...
effect?
A plasma still had an effect. Like, it was a weird thing.
I don't know what happened. You should...
Yeah, so I ended
I'm
up
glad
hitting
you
him
call
with
it
plasma.
Drudge, but...
Yeah, but the judge, obviously... out. Yeah, because I hit him with 3 shots, and he evaded... he evaded to the point where I did no damage, even though there was damage, like after doing like the whole thing.
Sure,
we
understand.
Yeah, that Dirge doesn't use his ability to not take damage. He uses that ability to take less damage.
Okay, right. You can. I think about it as almost like a reinforce, kind of, or at least adding an additional evade to it. It kind of reminds me of take a stress for the 3rd damage droid.
Yep. No, I get what you're saying, and that's the way I understood it as well. Okay. But,
well, did they have the same loadout? Do you remember that Old Para had brought marksmanship, proton cannon, and false transponder codes, really leaning into that bullseye? And if you can line it up without the reposition to be able to take the target lock, now you have the two crits, a focus mod, and a target lock on that four dice attack.
The jam could also be just in general helpful against getting locked against opposing stuff, because if you think about it, the rogue chassis has dead to rights, so anything in the bullseye can't use focus mod or green tokens anyway for defense.
True.
I wonder if that false transponder codes was mostly a defensive thing, right? Like, oh, Malrus can't just mag pulse me, right? Mm-hmm. If she's the only thing that can lock me, or Bondreg can't mag pulse me, right? Or the first Torp coming into me, like Tomax, can't just get an easy plasma, right? That type of thing.
True.
But can still be used somewhat offensive, because if you still get the lock, if you get bullseye and you just land it, mm-hmm. and you get to lock them, that helps your other friendly ships who do have to chew through their green tokens first normally to get rid of them.
Yeah, they can't use their focus on Finn Rao's attack because you have them dead to rights now. And they wouldn't be able to use it on yours. Still, I mean, that shot for 4 points is like that's a 5 or 6 point ship's attack, like an opener. So if you can pull it off, pretty crazy. But here's the tricksy one. All that kind of expected.
It's a very weird one.
Those are top class scum ships. His last one, another 4-pointer here. Another rogue class, Cad Bane in the Xanadu blood. Cad Bane, of course, can hand out his bad tokens after he successfully hits on his attack. It's every other turn. But he can hand off the stress from his linked actions or his... well, it wouldn't be from his cloak, but... I guess if you cloaked it, then decloaked, and... anyways. Can hand off red-orange tokens normally. Stress, which is really cool, because you can prevent people from, say, K-turning and following your friend around. Still very impactful. This one brings synced laser cannons, so has a... instead of just their 2 dice primary, having that 3 dice at range 1, 2, and 3. Ion bombs. Again, a nice control piece. You're potentially stressing people. You could, now they can't K-turn. Now they're ionized because they're behind you from the bomb. Very good debuff ship here. And then, if this... we got to put more debuffs in here. So why not Marv Sable Closure? This is the talent that says after you fully execute a maneuver, if you moved through an obstacle or 3 other things, structure, huge ship, or deployed. Now, cross those out. Moved through an obstacle, which is not overlap, just template touches the obstacle. You may choose an enemy ship in your front arc at range 1 to 2. That ship gains a strain token. So now you're handing out ions, stress, and strains. But you might be thinking, well, that's a risky upgrade. Sure is. Except for when you have Kira on board, who says you could move and perform. When you move and perform attacks, you ignore obstacles you're locking. On our top 16 game, we saw Cad Bane line up right behind a gas cloud, turn 1, moves up, locks it, boom. Turn 2, 3 banks through it, a bit barely, very close. If you are doing some sort of Kira things, definitely, you know, double check your first obstacle, make sure it's Kira usable. But move through and then apply the strain right away. This is a 3-point combination that... I've seen, but never in top 16 of worlds would I have had that on my bingo card, was Marge, Sable Closure, and Kira from the scum list there. Our sable closure is only smaller medium. If you could put it on a falcon, how cool would that be?
I don't know.
Well, side arc. It is front arc, so maybe.
That's true.
Maybe not.
This cad's just dishing out red tokens.
He's just mean. He's just mean.
Right? Like, here, like, I'm going to move through a thing. Here's a strain. I'm going to shoot you. Take my stress. And then after you have a stress, good luck getting away from my ion bomb and have some ion tokens next turn.
Yeah,
and so it's really interesting, like the Kira, it's like we talk about its synergy with Marge Sable. Like, clearly that's a main part of it. But also just when Cad Bane locks that obstacle, being able to move through, not taking any of the negative results, and then also being able to shoot at it, and ships that are obstructed aren't obstructed anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't get their defense dice additions. So there's a few compounding things. I think mostly it's this Cad Bane gets to pick an obstacle on the board. It's to say this obstacle I get to ignore, and you have to respect that I have to ignore it. So my dial is open around this obstacle, basically.
Yeah, it's you try to, a lot of the times when players will set up the obstacles, or sorry, they'd set up the objectives, and then you start putting obstacles right in front of objectives to try to force your opponent to avoid them. If they want to go towards the objective, Cad Bane doesn't have that problem. Well, a life of luxury.
Cad Bane being the last ship shooting out of all these three, like, Fen's already a high-powered attack. If there are giants with a proton cannon, scary attack. If Mando get, you know, his three-die attack, if he's got his ability active, that's a scary attack, well-modded too. And if Cad Bane's shooting last, there's a good chance most of the defensive tokens have been spent, which means his ability is more likely to land and pass something like a stress over from all the linked actions he can do.
Sure.
And force them to be able to have Cad Bane's control be more active throughout the game.
Yeah, and that kind of debuff or control aspect is something that elevates scum more than the sum of their parts. It's very similar to like what FO has been leaning into with their chaff missiles and their jamming from the whispers. Not so much chaff missiles anymore, but you understand what I'm trying to say. So it is refreshing, I guess, to see that scum's still leaning into those tricks, and that's what makes them successful. The false transponder codes, the debuff tokens, ionization, handing out strain and stress. Those are the crafty tricks you have to do to be able to outfly your opponent.
Yeah, and they're not, the thing about them is these particular tricks and how they're being applied to the opponent, they're not so easily triggered or unstoppable in a manner that would be oppressive to your opponent. It's effective. It really good at what it does, but it's not impossible to handle. Your opponent does have some kind of agency in handling it. And then this is kind of the level of scum quote tricks mm-hmm. that I think is like acceptable in my eyes and how the game is. There could be some other ways to do it, but the heightened level of it feels like it doesn't put opponents in like unplayable situations, but it's also enough to still affect the game in a strong manner.
I would agree with that. A lot of these are limited use as well. Cad Bane's every other turn. The false transponder codes are once. The iron bombs are twice, and Mars Sable is probably once. So let's be real here. But if you get a second one off, I think that's on your opponent, to be honest with you. But yeah, I would tend to agree. That's, you got to leverage those resources, right? Well, let's take a look then at what do you want to do next, actually, Ryan? I'll
bounce. Well, I guess to help clarify. For people who may want to test out this list themselves, Olpar opted for his obstacle choice for three gas clouds. And if you look at them on Yasby, they're numbers 4, 5, and 6, basically the three newest ones. We don't have a particular known reason as to why he chose those, other than the potential of breaking locks. It's not going to affect Mandalorian that much. Cad Bane could move through one that he doesn't have Kira locked, pick up a strain, and then shoot someone to pass it off if he doesn't already have it shot off of him. Those type of things. Ion might not be super detrimental to the rogue. They would actually get access to a one straight, and they already have the one bank. It may not be what they want to do, but... and then also having stuff get ion bombed to then go into more ion clouds that have a chance to ion them still could lock them in ion jail for way longer than they were hoping to.
Yeah. Did you say the Razor Crest as well? Razor Crest getting one banks to clear stress.
Oh, true. Yeah. I mean, that one required to rolling a crit on the ion cloud versus...
That's true. That's true.
Because it only dishes out one.
Yeah, it only gets one. Maybe not the risk you're willing to take.
You need a little Cad Bane in there. Or actually, no, not Cad Bane. What is it? That Dace, but I think Dace...
Dace Bone Arm.
Dace. Dace is not... Dace is enemy only, unfortunately.
That's... I know. that would be a good way to...
The last...
Like, okay, now you got a bank.
I think we saw another scum squad that was Two Fangs, Dace, two Y-Wings... and Bosk, so a 6-ship, 4-4-4-3-3-2, and I forget what it was in that game that we were watching from, and we thought it would be hilarious to use Ace on friendlies, but no, you cannot.
I think it's overall probably, like, I think the Cad Bane had been decently key if he was handing out stress to opposing ships to help Mando not be in spots where he gets turned around on. As we talked about, his dials, like, not the greatest, especially for clearing stress. It's really good to tell your opponent they have to respect the zero stop or the 5K. Like, that's a very dangerous turn. But after you've done a red move, better be right that you can still move forward or be okay staying stressed and still find a target if you're the Mando player.
Yeah.
So, but if Cad Bane's handing out those debuff tokens or ion, whether it's by the stress from his ability to hit and give one of those tokens to his opponent or the ion bomb hitting, that can help corral opposing ships for Mandalorian to easily find better. And also Fen Rao too. Once, as you guys know, played Fangs, once a Fang gets stressed, they kind of have a very predictable flight pattern unless they disengage for a turn or two.
Yeah, R2 boost. Maybe a barrel roll if you're in close quarters, but yeah, the decision tree gets pretty narrow at a certain point. Maybe Fen Rao can, like, hard one to, like, avoid an obstacle and stay range one of someone he's defending and attacking against, but it's a lot more rare, to say the least.
I'd say Olpara, if you get the chance to listen to this, if you would respond near the GSP Discord or YouTube comments on this episode, and what piece really became the unsung hero, or any other things you wanted to add to this discussion overall. But I think we probably move into his path to the top 16, right? Because the question a lot of it becomes, so what did he end up facing? Like, what worked, what didn't work? What scenarios, were there any trends, what patterns, etc.? And I think that's what you have up on screen right now.
Yep. Taking a look at their tournament summary. But we got to reference this, though, with scenarios, because that is an important factor in the list matchups. But I think you had those all prepared already.
Yes, I have the list of the rounds and what scenario was played on those rounds, on top of just the basic did he win or lose, and then versus what. It's very interesting to see. See, he started off day one going 3-2 It pretty much like made it on the almost baseline level to make it into Day Two of Worlds. He won his first two games, both versus Empire. First one was Salvage, second one was Scramble. He lost his second game against an FO list from Kester Smith in Chance. And won Assault against Corentin, who had recently won with the exact same list, I believe, at Sith Taker Open. So that was probably a pretty tough game. And then lost again to FO in the fifth round in Salvage. So two losses on day one were both to First Order, but won his other three games against Empire. So only faced two factions the entire day one of Swiss. Won against all of Empire, lost against all of First Order. And then we flip the script into day two of Worlds on Saturday. He trucked through every single opponent, won every single, he had to win every single game. Otherwise, or at least the lowest seed, the lowest record we saw in top 16 was a 7-win, 1-tie, 2-losses. But he trucked through and won every single one of his games on Saturday. 4 resistance lists in a row, starting from round 6 all the way to round 9. Which would be Scramble, Assault, Chance, and Assault again, because we had completed the cycle before that second or third Assault at that point in there. And then round 10, he won a game against against Rebels. So, only faced two factions. Obviously, one of them 4 times being Resistance, and then another one being Rebel. Potentially, I mean, within that bracket, he was eliminating Resistance players by those victories, right? Because at that point, all those other players were 2 losses. Mm-hmm. So just chopping Resistance off 2. The block all the way through. Yep. Mm. Wait, where'd all the Resistance go? And just like, they're either getting chopped up from their own matchups against each other, or apparently by Old Para. Not all of them were 5-ship Resistance. Well, not all of them were what I would call the standard 5-ship resistance.
I was going to say, they're all 5-ship resistance, actually.
They're all 5-ship. There was a Falcon version there with 2 Y-Wings and 2 X-Wings. There was a 2X pod X and a Y-Wing, 3X, 2Y, and then 5X. Those were all of the variations he fought. So not a consistent type, but he consistently beat them.
Is that a Chewbacca, then? To get the 2 Y-Wings? 4-4-6.
Scroll down and take a look here on Falcon. His round by round.
Unless they got a 2-pointer Y wing.
Yep, it was Chewbacca. Chewbacca, oh. Elo, Snap, Shara, or Shaza, and Lega.
In what round?
Round 7. Round 7. You can scroll down.
Versus old Jester. Okay. That is a Resistance 5-ship squad.
Yep, round 6, the other was, that was Trigger Happy Poe, the 7-pointer, with BB-8, LO Temin, and then Shaza Y-Wing, and then we go to,
wow,
I think this was, it says Doc, I think this was Dom Flanagan, I think, in round 8, because this looks like the exact list. I played against Dom Flanagan as well in day 1. He tried some other things around.
Commander, I believe, Commander with the 2 Ys.
Yep, Commander with the 2 Ys, both with concussion bombs. Yeah, so eliminated Dom, unfortunately, at that point, and then had faced off against the 5 Resistance, all T-70, Elo, Temin, Jess, Cara Kun, and Nimi.
I'm sure his eyes rolled so hard when he saw his last opponent. He was like, oh, okay. Well, I got through the weird ones. At least this is a little bit more standard. Not easier, by any means.
Yeah. It's like another Resistance.
Well, I mean, they're willing to jest, right?
It definitely seems like, I mean, based on the results, Old Para seemed to do obviously really well against Resistance and Empire and only had 1 other game against Rebel. But again, Old Para, if you wanted to add in what you like to see with your list, because we only know based on the results we see from Worlds, which... technically small but high quality, Sam. High quality in terms of, like, you know, the play, the event, very big, lots of high quality player type of thing.
Interesting.
And then, yeah. Will, did you get to cast the stream game of his top 16?
Yes.
Why don't you talk about that?
Yes. He... was it the top 16? No, I think we...
You had him.
I remember he was on the TV.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
He was there for the top 16, and then I think he also streamed them against one of the Empire lists as well.
No, we never. Did we?
Yeah. Caleb,
it would have been day. It would have been day one if you had him on, because his Empire was only day one.
To be fair, it was a long weekend. So.
Sure. I figured you're more likely to remember the top 16.
We definitely had him 4K. In top 16, yes, because Chris was like, hey, we haven't done the matchups yet, but is there... And we're like, the scum list, before he could even finish. We're like, whatever it is, give us the scum. Don't even care what the matchup is. Just, we want to see that. We want to see old Paro one last time. Granted, we didn't discount him, but we didn't want to see his if he was the eventual champion, we wanted to see his run. We wanted to get multiple videos of him in there. So, from what I remember, he was just blasting arcs left and right, and then eventually succumbed to the amount of damage he needed to get. Actually, I think at some point, Fen Rao got... hit by something nasty and had to fly off. He couldn't turn back around into the fight. And I think that's really what cost him the game, is Fen Rao really came in for one big attack, did it, destroyed the arc, but then kind of left everybody else behind him as he evacuated to safety. I forget if it was a bad crit or if he was like on one hull or something like that, but I just know that he was not having it. And I think... I want to say that one of the arcs slipped away, like they destroyed one, and then one slipped away, and then that one that slipped away found Fen Rao at range 2, and took him out. If I'm remembering that game correctly, I'll have to rewatch it on either Twitch or YouTube. Be on the lookout for those YouTube videos coming soon. But the Marcel, what do you think the correlation is between... So, it's very clearly broken down by faction. Good against the Resistance X-Wings. Good against Imperials, whether it's bombers or beef of some sort. Mm-hmm. But bad against FO. Specifically, Kester Smith is flying Triple Whisper, which is Wraith, whatever one, doesn't have an eye. And then Nightfall with Gaelic and Malorus, of course.
Yeah.
And then the other one looks to be Von Reg, LaHughes, Kylo, and then the two
three-pointers.
Pretty standard FO list building there. 5-5-4-3-3. Pretty easy to build a list.
Just looking at this, I think... More than anything, it's the element of surprise. So I think it's, again, not to downplay Masiya's ability, but I also think a lot of it has to do with that choice that you make, that mathematics that you make at the beginning of the game, and you're, mm-hmm. and especially with the Resistance, you're like, yeah, I can probably outlast this. Just point everything at it and shoot it and kill it, and outlast it. So that's, and also in doing so, that 5K turn with the contraband cybernetic, that 5K turn goes really far. And if you're doing that at initiative 5 against, you know, initiative 3s and 4s, T-70s, they're going to be out of position and you're just going to be chasing them down for a while. So I think a lot of it has to do with just bad mathematics on the opponent's parts. And against something like Corinton's list, I genuinely don't know. I mean,
I have no idea how Corinton's list would be able to do damage against most of the...
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's probably that it's not putting out enough damage. The TIE fighters are probably rolling one or two hits, and they're getting popped by either the proton bullseye thing that they can't mm-hmm. use their green tokens on. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reinforce doesn't work if you've got the bullseye dead to rights, right?
Correct. Dead correct. To rights does not allow the reinforce to work. On top of the fact that, as we mentioned, it's very likely Mando brought false transponder codes. We know Dirge did. So, like, if he got road roll well and gets to just lock Rack, like his player two on the main engagement turn, lock Rack so Rack doesn't have a reinforce for any shot anyway, and or Tomax doesn't get to fire a plasma torp.
Mm-hmm. I would have to agree that these two Rack matchups, they're going to be hesitant to join the joust with the rest of the ships, right? You're going to try to sneak your decimator around at least a little bit. You can't just line up across some dirge and hope for the best there.
And those TIE fighters don't have the target lock action to force the false transponder code.
Right.
So, yeah.
True.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's probably that is just people calculating that they're going to be able to outjoust right. it and find out that they can't.
Right.
Or at least they go at Mando and they don't, like, they haven't done the math to realize how much damage Mando mitigates. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the resistance stuff went, yeah, well, let's go kill Mando. And then they're like, I thought Mando should have died there, where he super wasn't supposed to die at all.
Right. He lines up against three T-70s and you're like, oh, yeah, let's go, Mando. You think you can handle this? And we're like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're doing either zero or one damage at most per shot, so he's taking...
If he's got his ability active and a focus token, he should only take...
charges from the child. He's probably taking one per shot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. At most, maybe one or none.
And then, like, if it's range controlled well enough by old Para, he gets to maybe 5k behind them. And they're like, well, now what?
Yeah, unless you're Doza or Elo. You got to make some real choices all of a sudden.
Yeah,
and that multiple, just every round being able to roll 5 dice, range 1. Against the T-70s, they are also predictable, so Fen Rao knows where they're going to be, and it's just like, okay, you're going to eat 5 dice and probably die pretty quickly. Fen Rao and Dirge can kill a T-70 in one round.
I am surprised, though, in the Resistance, faced 5 Y-Rings and a Falcon. And Chewbacca, do you know if it's Notorious Chewbacca? Because then he might be going front back.
No, it was a trick shot.
Oh, so definitely going side arc then. That's interesting, being able to still leverage Finn in those engagements where you have bombs you have to look out for. You have that Falcon turret in addition to the extra numbers as well. So maybe...
I think old Parra has been playing Fen Rao since he, like, came out in first edition.
Yeah, so I've seen a few turrets.
Consistently, so right. he's probably very familiar with the things Fen Rao doesn't want to see and how to play around. So
that's true.
It's not like the Y-Wings only drop a bomb normally backwards. So as long as you know how to attack on certain angles to minimize that, or know when to turn away to not fall for the trap the turn after, then it should be okay, because then those Y-Wings aren't doing real damage to Fen Rao. As long as they're ripping a T-70 off the board pretty early, that'll severely hamper the damage incoming on the rest of the scum list.
Yeah, that's true. I never really thought about how, from like a pure like dial and action standpoint, Rogue class are just kind of Fang fighters without the hard two.
I think the Rogues actually have a faster straight blue, right? They have 4 straight blue.
Yeah, they have a 4 straight blue.
Fangs only have 3 straight blue.
Do they have 1 and 2 bank blues?
They do.
Yes.
Okay.
They just don't have the turns.
Don't have the turn. But as far as like positioning and like flight patterns, and it's going to be similar to a Fang, which I agree. I remember old Para showing up with the old Paratani, or whatever it used to be called. Which, of course, had Fang feathers in it. So, turns out, it does take years of practice and skills to be able to compete at such a high level. So, obviously, a lot of praise for that. Yeah, I would be interested to see if how their run would have been had they faced more of these arcs, or what faction didn't they face? Rebels?
Faced once. No, Para faced Rebels once. Didn't face Separatists, but a lot of people didn't face Separatists.
Unfortunately.
I think just the fact of facing Rebel and Republic once is at least noteworthy in that regard. Okay. As we said, he beat every Empire he saw, which was 3, beat every Resistance he saw, which was 4, and he lost both FO games, but then won the Rebel game and lost the Republic game in the cut.
Makes sense.
Both the Rebel and both the one-offs, the Rebel Republic, were like, one was round 10, so basically the winning in, and the other was top 16 cut. So both were strong positioned players in lists.
Yeah, that's a stressful day too. My heart goes out to them. That every match all day is winner in, or winner not in, either way. A bubble match, if you will, to be able to get to day 3. Had to go undefeated all day 2. That's an impressive feat. That's, again, where that practice and, reps. Well, I guess that's still practice, but in the endurance factor of X-Wing starts to set in, start getting sloppy, start making bad choices on deployment or target priorities, and a veteran player can push through those challenges. Anything else? You want to talk about for matchups? I got so distracted on.
I don't think so. I mean, I think until maybe we hear some stuff about. I mean, so I guess here's a good question for us, as I think we're probably done with the matchups and the overall world's summary run from Ulpara. But as a X-Wing player that we all are, all three of us, and maybe the people joining us on Twitch right now too. How interested, on a scale of 1 to 10, are you in trying this list out?
Me? I am maybe a 1. I'm actually flying a lot of scum, and even in a... we're starting a team tournament in like 2 weeks, and I have scum as my faction.
There you go.
And I have zero interest in flying. I've got lists that I played one today that uses a couple of the same tools he's got, but I've got zero on just flying Mandalorian. The other ships are fine. Mando, not my.
I was gonna say.
Cup of tea.
And you got the reverse. I do. The Mandalorian being there's one of the reasons I would. Want to actually play this. And I'm scum is like the lowest of my totem pole of interest factions for me right now, and it has been since I've actually sold off some of my scum stuff to other players. So but I would definitely throw this up on TTS and try it out as is. That's the one thing I would highly recommend to everyone. I know first thing everyone loves to do is put their spin or twist or tweak things about a list. Before you do that, especially when it's coming from someone who is probably fine-tune this list leading all the way up to Worlds. Ulpara is a very experienced scum player. And on top of that, you don't yet have that experience or may not have played scum in a while. Play it as is for a lot more games before you make tweaks. And then find out along the way what might work better for you or what works in some matchups and see if those work. But I would highly recommend trying it as is, no adjustments first, see how it runs. I would put this on a scale of 6 to me, and that's mostly because I'm not too interested in Scum as a faction, but I think it is a really cool list, as a lot of the pilots I would like to fly in Scum, especially the Mandalorian.
I'm working this one pretty high. I was showing off that my Razor Crest is out of its box, and this, I've been trying to fly it in person. I love the model. Want to see it on the table more. And I think this just gave me my excuse to get the Rogue Class expansion. I was like, oh, do you really need to? But, you know, might as well. So I'm excited. I didn't realize that there were two different paint jobs in the Rogue Class. Are the
differentiate Z95s? Them off the bat for you.
Are the Z95s different in the double
Z95? They are not.
No.
I don't think so.
Well, they're military vehicles, so I guess that makes sense. But yeah, I'm excited to fly. Like I said, give me a reason to go out and get some Rogues, and I'm already trying to get that Mandalorian on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on from that, we're going to be looking at what Ryan has called First Order Bubbles Bursted. Can you give us a breakdown on this next, or some information on this next segment as I pull up this list here?
So overall, we saw that we've all kind of agreed the five main factions going into Worlds that we assumed would have some presence in the top brackets would be Empire, Rebels, Resistance, Republic, and First Order. Only one of those five did not make cut, and that's the First Order. That's why, aka, especially for people who are enjoying the NCAA basketball bracket, the March Madness, the term bubbles or on the bubble is commonly used before they make the brackets finalized, and the bubbles were bursted for the FO. They did not make it into the top 16 cut at all. But they did have some pretty close ones. They have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them were 7-0-3. 7 wins, 3 losses. And funny enough, all of those were within the final rankings between 21 and 31. Very tight amount. So those 7 were all within only 3 out of that 10 bracket group of 21 to 31 of final placing were not FO, which means a lot of their losses kind of ended up in the same region. Only one of these players didn't have a game loss in round 9 or 10, which makes sense as their strength of schedule. If it's all around the same range, they would theoretically have the same round brackets that they ended up losing in, generating a similar strength of schedule for who they fought. And then, Will, when you have it up, we can go by the names that you have available to you, since you have more of the admin rights to see the real names, so we don't have to guess who these players are by the username. Some of them aren't, so like you got some recognizable names, Doug Howe, Fawn Longalon, there's a Jack Johnson there, a Marcin Majcik there. Kester Smith, who was actually one of Old Para's losses in Swiss as well, the Mr. Triple Whisper. I lost to Kester as well in a very close assault game.
I lost to him this weekend in the league match.
Ah, gotcha. Is he an NCS?
But it was classic situation. I built a list minutes before the match, and he comes in with his custom painted world squad. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Well, uphill battle ready. All of a sudden.
He knows everything there is to know.
I wouldn't say he made it to the Rave Crabs listening. Theorized amongst the week, but only actually did the list the real work moments before. Basically, I didn't bring a decimator when I heard I was facing Vefo and Kester Smith. So,
probably not a good idea.
Not a good idea. Literally anything but that. Anyone see, I do have, I was trying to make this shot a little bit better, but I think this is This is good. It's gonna get here. Let's go over to that so I can stop messing with that. And this is the first one I had pulled up in your list. I think these are in order. Yes. This is Fruitcake Bat, who also I'm not familiar with that moniker either. What was her overall placing? Do you have that notated down? Well, probably
21 through 31.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess you have the range.
He's top one. Fruitcake Bat is 21st overall.
It's Greg Squire. Big shout out to Greg Squire for getting that 21st spot. Honestly, all of these players, even though we're talking of the non-top cut or whatever, there's 300 people in this event. So anywhere near the top is an amazing accomplishment. We do not want to undersell that. These are like, oh, these lists are didn't make top cut, so probably not good. It's probably pretty good. Let's take a look at the first one here. Greg Squad, 5-ship FO. Von Reg as his 5-pointer. Kylo as his other 5-pointer. Got LaHughes, Midnight, and Malorus. How many mag pulses are we looking at? One on Von Reg, one on Malorus. Kylo utilizing concussion missiles, advanced optics, instinctive aim. Love that combination. You don't get Predator anymore, which is kind of sad, but you do get Brilliant. And then LaHughes with barrage rockets and Midnight with Predator and crack shot. So leaning into the munitions, but also the jams from Kylo and the two mag pulse warheads for the squad. Classic list building here with that 5-5-4-3-3.
Yeah, very, very. We talked about this as like one of the main archetypes in FO, showed up plenty, and this is very. I think the least standard thing about this is probably the talent choice with Von Reg, opting for elusive instead of people who may go like lone wolf marksmanship or crack shot. So opted to allow Von Reg to stay close to his friends while still getting a defensive only reroll until he does another red move to get that charge back. But everything else is very similar loadout that we've seen and pilot composition.
I wonder if he just really loves that big 5K or what to you, because like grab a shield from Deuterium, throw in a big 5K, get out of the fight for a round, come back in strong the following round with an extra shield and elusive.
Yeah, that is definitely an option. To note, I'm starting to compile specifically where all the losses ended up, because there were some people in chat wondering, oh, well, what was the round that, if they're all kind of grouped in the similar spot, what round seemed to be the killer round? To note for Greg here, Fruitcake Bat, his losses ended up in round 5 in salvage, round 8 in chance, and round 9 in assault. So no same scenario.
Yeah.
Those losses did come to Republic, Rebel, and Republic.
I mean, losing to Republic in assault round 9, like, that's a tough way to lose your tournament or lose your ability to progress in your tournament.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what I was assuming is the round 7 assault. I think I said that earlier, but round 7 assault, round 8 chance, and then back to assault for round 9. These first order struggle, I think, in assault. They don't have any medium bases. Unless they're destroying ships, it's very difficult to control those objectives.
A little bit of cannibalization here, actually, too, because Fruitcake Bat, aka Greg, won in round 6 and 7 against two other FO players that are on this list that I have here. So, maybe one of the reasons why this is one of the top other FO players that finished close to the cut, ended up cutting through some of his own FO buddies along the way, unfortunately.
Interesting.
There was, I don't know about you, Marcel, or what you saw around you, or Will, what you saw in some of your streams when you're walking around, But I know I played a decent amount of mirror match style or same faction matchups in Resistance, and it sounded like FO players might have done that a little bit too. I mean, you're bound to have some mirrors, but there felt right. like to be a higher prevalence of them on day two for FO and Resistance, it seemed.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, like, because you don't get paired up by, like, strength of schedule, just your record in general. So I'm not really sure the correlation. I know, like, a lot of, I think it was Rebels as well, in day two, cannibalized each other, had to fight each other, which is why we surprisingly didn't see a lot of them in the top cut. Or not as many as we expected, anyways. So that makes a lot of sense of why, especially the concentration of them at that 7-3 could have that factor as well, to where they just couldn't get past each other because they kept having to run in, to the same people. But very impressive run for Greg here. We're going to look at Kester Smith. This is, as we explained before, Triple Whisper, Nightfall, Wrath, Kylo, Malorus, Gaelic. So all fives except for Nightfall. And they're leaning into Pattern Analyzer. Whoever taught Kester that you can take two actions when you K-turn. The reposition or that focus jam with the enhanced jamming suite must have really inspired him. Because he's
isn't that what Crispy been flying, or is very close to it at least? Because he had
Crispy did not have any whispers in his current list, but when he fly when he was... Kylo before, he did like the pattern analyzer version.
Yeah, like at Gen Con, mm-hmm. he had Kylo, Wrath, both of them with pattern, and basically flying.
I think this
he didn't
is
have
like
Nightfall.
The...
He had a four ship because he also had like. Von Reg and Hollow or something
right,
like that.
Right. This is like the Wrath build. Predator, Marksmanship, Ion Cannon, Pattern. Wrath needs a red token to fire their Bullseye as a bonus attack. So pretty easy to get a red token while you're K-turning. Red or orange token, so whether you can jam yourself, I guess. But pretty easy to do that while you're K-turning, plus because Pattern Analyzer gives you an action, now you could reposition an I-5, find that bullseye, and even jam the one of the targets you're about to attack. It packs a lot of offense between the if you're lining up those bullseye bonus attacks. But they have, 5-4 and 3 sloops, plus, like I said, the options for repositions after those. So I don't think I've seen a Wrath built not like this in quite a while. It's very, very good. So unsurprised to see it here. But yeah, no missile on Kylo. Just leaning into that, coming in close and pattern analyzing. Like I said, I got a chance to play them this week. Very aggressive with their I-5 whispers. They know they need to dive in to into range one, get the jam, and then K-turn behind the ship that they jammed. So it's kind of like that friend row where, you know, it's knife's edge, where you gotta really gotta plan your engagement to get the right positioning for it.
Yeah, when I face Kester, we were playing an assault, and he put Kylo, Wrath, and Gaelic together and rushed my Lulo that was meant to be more on a bait situation. And there was some road things we both had to consider in our movements. And I wanted Lulo to shoot up the side of the board after he tried to close in on me. And I kept saving my defense token, being a focus or evade, for his ion cannon shot from Wrath, because if I wanted to like split and leave with a fast move, I'd rather take damage from maybe a 1 or 2 damage from a Gaelic shot or a Kylo shot versus actually getting ioned. So, but the way I positioned myself, a little cut back up in the middle of the board versus up the side towards his back corner assault objective, while all my four T-70s tried to handle Nightfall being just as Kate. Basically, our Nightfall, his Nightfall and my Lulo were like both being cagey in corners a little bit. His Malrus came up in the middle a little bit, and my four T-70s tried to occupy the three main triangle zones that I created for assault. And it was in my favor a little bit. We both I lost Lulo and he lost Nightfall in the same turns. And then he was able to kill a T-70, whereas I wasn't able to finish off really another ship since I was prioritizing holding zones and was a little more difficult to get more guns back on target for me. So that's how he was able to pull out the win. Very close game. Fun time.
What about his record? Is opponents that he faced, anything stick out to you there? Again, got 22nd place. Very impressive.
Yep. So his losses all came in one giant block. He won his first four games, including beating Old Par, as we talked about before. Mm-hmm. His other three what wins leading up to that.
Yeah.
He beat Empire. He beat a double Ghost Rebel.
There's a couple flying around. Yeah.
He beat Olpara, then he beat Rebel, 2X, Fang, Z95, and a TIE Fighter. And then three losses in a row. So round 5, 6, and 7. Lost to Rebel, 2B, XA, TIE Fighter. Lost to a Rack Empire-based five-ship list with Farov. Then lost to two eventual top 16 players, being Jonathan Grasser, who was that first Empire loss. His second Empire loss, being his third loss overall, was against Jeremy Chambly, who you guys had on stream. I know you did in his top 8 matchup with the Jenden Rack 2 SL Bombers.
So,
and then Kester ended up winning 3 games in a row, one Rebel, my Resistance, and another Rebel.
Okay. So, I mean, props to him to finish the day strong. I mean, the math supported a 7-3. I don't know if with draws, I don't think any 7-0-3s got into the top cut.
Do you know? Yeah, it was all 7-1-2s that ended up making it. Not all the 7-1-2s, but out of the 7 wins, it had to be a 7-1-2.
Right, yeah, exactly. You needed something more than your just 7 wins, which... props to them for a finish of the day strong, fighting over that top FO, lost by one position. So heartfelt losses, but you know what? Came to play 10 games and did. And this, so, I mean, besides obviously playing against players who are very good, what out of those list do you think helped them or hurt Kester's chances of victory?
Oh, I mean, out of his losses, what?
Yeah,
what,
like Jenden, I could see Jenden being a hard thing to lock down and jam. A very fast.
It's weird because he won his first game of the event that included a rack or at least a decimator. But then his other two of his other losses were against the only other two times he played Empire. Those both had rack. You would think, right, with three whispers, that rack would never be allowed to have a reinforce, which may be true, but also they need to still do damage enough to bring rack down.
Right.
And maybe the damage incoming from stuff that wasn't rack, or maybe even was still from rack, was just too much to handle. If those whispers are doing repositions into jams, they don't have green tokens to mitigate that free Vader damage, right? From Vader crew on rack.
That's true.
So it's not
the
easiest thing to do, right? You ideally want to just be able to focus jam.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. One Darth Vader, one good Jenden shot, and a range one from rack, and you could just lose a whisper, even if it's Kylo.
Even if it's like... just the rack damage, and then if a death fire is throwing a bomb out, you have to be very careful of that. I think rack would very well take one shield from a proton bomb if it's one damage on two or three whispers around rack.
Sure.
And then on top of that, if Tomax is coming in with a plasma and there's still a shield left on one of those, or even if there's not a shield, just three health, like that's a really well modded shot from Tomax.
Yeah. Also remember the pattern analyzers to keep you in the fight, but with Death Troopers, that pattern analyzer.
That's a hindrance all of a sudden. The first time is cool, but then you're broken. You can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people generally like think Whispers have a good matchup into Decimators, and they can if engineered correctly, but the rack that we normally see is a lot of tools to still punish the Whispers being around them.
Interesting. Well, we better keep it moving here. Because we got a couple more to go through. This one's called Unsaved Squadron.
Our next one on the list, the name is Chung Chung. I don't know if that is the same as what you see.
Can you tell me their
placement
position?
Is 24.
He goes by Max, and that's his Christian name or whatever. His government name. Max.
Alright. Yeah, so Max flew Major Von Reg with Lone Wolf Marksmanship, Magpulse, and the Power Cells. Commander Malrus with Magpulse. Lieutenant Gaelic with Heavy Laser Cannon and Proud Tradition. Kylo with the Pattern Analyzer version, so the same one as the one we just talked about. And LeHughes, which is the same loadout also that all the other people have been using. It seems like there's a handful of tools that people are using. One of the things that are blatantly missing from these three, at least maybe we'll see them in the next ones, are the 3-point guys. What are they?
DT and Scorch, the three die UFOs.
Yeah, the DT and Scorch are missing, but that's, people are going for Gaelic above those two guys, which sometimes you see them with the heavy laser cannon. In this case with heavy laser cannon, sometimes with the ion cannon. But it's again using the same tools that other people have been using, just to taste, I guess. Just pick the five ships that you like to taste. And it seems to be pretty consistent. So
it seems Major Von Reg is the question for most people. They want to, they're either leaning hard into Von Reg or they don't bring him at all as their five pointer. What was the other one? It was Wraith is the other one, or Wrath or whatever.
So you get. Wrath, you get this, or sometimes you get, you haven't seen them, but sometimes like people might opt to Hollow or one of these silencers. Sure. I think Major Von Reg is the best choice right now, mostly because of the Magpulse. It's Magpulse at I6 right now is the best tool against Gina. I mean, you don't want to get the proton torpedo, with all the works, a quick Magpulse kind of takes care of that.
Yeah, this Von Reg with Lone Wolf seems to, what do I say? It's one of those ships where it's just like, you get that whole third of the board, dude. Like, go hold it down, whatever objective's over there. If there's a single ship over there, you could fight it. Just hit it with your Magpulse. Call it good. So that's definitely a role Von Reg can take as that maneuverable I-6. Again, and power cells on Von Reg. People are really leaning into the extra shields and health on him.
Power cells is a pretty nice tool on him, because Von Reg has a really good way of disengaging via the one hard barrel, then boost, just be out of shots at I-6, and then just come back in with an extra shield the next turn by doing another one hard that has to, like, they can get you back on target pretty quickly in a really tight spot. In terms of Max's matchups, we see kind of a pretty decent spread. Didn't face resistance, though, at all. Ended up facing two opposing FOs, one of which we know Fruitcake Bat, our first FO list, beat him in round 7. But his first win was round 1 against another FO that brought us Eye Shuttle and FO Bombers. Very experimental. Round 2 loss against 2BX Rebel Tie A-Wing. Would go on to beat a 4 TIE Bomber Rack, then beat a 3 TIE Bomber 3 TIE Fighter Empire, would beat a Scum Hodgepodge-ish of a Seek, a Hawk, which I assume is Dace, a Rogue, a Mandaru, I assume, and a Y-Wing. This might be the same FO list we saw at S Sith Taker that did well, that went undefeated in Swiss. Then lost to, or no, won against Jenden Rack 2 Bombers. So we have last Kester, who lost the Jenden Rack 2 Bomber, but then we have Max beating it. Obviously, Triple Whisper versus not Triple Whisper, right? And when you have Matt, when you have Bonreg I6 being able to snipe back with a Magpulse,
yeah,
against Rack is a lot easier to pull that reinforce off and reduce its offensive output. And then would win 8-9 and basically win 8 versus an Empire list. Looks like Vader, Soontir, Tomax, Scythe 6 probably, and Larir, if that all fits. I think that does.
That sounds about right.
Would win against Bodica, Fenn, Luke, Hull, Auckland, and Keo. And then in a win and in, his final loss came in round 10. Very sad. But lost to a Falcon, a Fang, Paul Auckland, I assume, Sabine Tai, and Keo. So probably a Falcon, Fen Rao, Sabine Tai, Paul Auckland, and Keo.
So by or Lando. Gamer.
Yeah, probably Lando, yeah. Oh, I think we did see, was it a Lando Bistan in cut, right?
That was probably who got in from that. Actually, that makes sense because Lando was in the cut. So as our only Rebel Falcon.
Some breakdown of Max's matchups. I don't think there's really any consistency to the losses. Let me double check the rounds. So lost in 2, 7, and 10. So that's scramble, assault, salvage. No consistent scenario there. Obviously, different lists within each of those. So, I think probably any other notes on Max, aka Chung Chung. We can move on to Marcin Wycheck.
Yeah.
Marcin was ranked 25.
25. I'll put a little note
right after.
Yeah, this. I mean, this is why we're taking a look at him. I was like, why? Where'd all the FO go? And just outside the cut. Unsurprising here. 5-5-4-3-3. This time decides to do the swarm tactics with quick draw to bump up. Quick draw is the 5-pointer. The other 5-pointer. That's not Kylo. Uses swarm tactics and targeting synchronizer to get whirlwind to shoot those cluster missiles at I-6 and get all the fancy things with your advanced optics and all the focus tokens. So this one also takes cluster missile on Malorus. So looking at a potential 7 attacks. 8.
8 attacks.
From quick draw, that's right.
Yeah.
That's an opening round of shots.
Yeah, 8 attacks and 1, 2, 3, 4 happening at initiative 6. Yeah. And then potentially, or even 5, depending on. And then the rest are also initiative 5. So all of your shots coming in at I-5 or higher, as long as you're keeping Whirlwind close to quick draw.
Yeah, it obviously wasn't Marcin, but it might have been. But either way, We saw a quick draw on stream, and they took a shot, and it only knocked off one shield. Okay, it was like the opening shot for the opponent. And quick draw elected not to flip their charge and do a bonus attack. And we're like, what are you doing? Like, why would you take a shield and not do a bonus attack? And that's because the second attack came in on quick draw. Because obviously, focus fire, pretty smart. Especially against quick draw who only took a target lock, right? So the second attack comes in, knocks off the other two shields. And then they flip the bonus attack charge. Because then they have access to Fanatical to double modify the follow-up or their bonus attack. I thought that was really interesting. I never had considered saving your bonus attack, but if you expect to lose all your shields at once.
Yeah, because I probably don't think, I mean, you'd have to ask them, but I would probably not think that it's with the hope of shooting later with Fanatical. Because I think if I'm playing quick draw and I'm in that scenario where there's focus fire on it, by holding onto that charge and you only losing one shield, you're hopefully discouraging them from continuing to shoot at him, because then he still has that in his back pocket. So it's like, I'm not, same thing like if you're shooting Dengar, and you try to shoot him with the ship that you prefer him to shoot you with, and it says like, nope, I'm not shooting you back. A lot of the time is you're passing that up because you don't want, you know, because once you spend that charge, like the floodgates are open. It's like, okay, charge spent. You know, they'll kill it.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
So it could have been, it could have also been a defensive, bluff, not a bluff, but like a defensive thing that just didn't, you know, that the opponent didn't fall for.
Maybe. It's just an interesting take, but we've seen this targeting synchronizer whirlwind or swarm tactics targeting synchronizer on Quickdraw plus whirlwind quite a bit ever since Quickdraw got bumped down to 5 points. It can fit beautifully in these 5/5/4/3/3 squads. Obviously, you still have Malorus, Midnight, your heavy hitters at three. Again, Marcin here does not take Scorching DT, prefers the higher initiative, even though Malorus is FO, just flying 17 point lists plus Malorus.
I mean, kinda, yeah. I think you still gotta make your list decision based on which Kylo you're taking first. That'll kind of drastically change your list composition. And then after that, if it happens to be Whisper Kylo, then like the other five would be probably the next choice you make. And then just it, because of how sort of restricted FO is on the building aspect of it, do you go the standard fill out of 4-3-3, where one of the threes is going to be Malrus, which is why that just slots into your point of it being 17? Or do you go two other fives and make it 5-5-5-5/4/5s, which has not very common and hasn't really netted a ton of great success anyway. So Malrus is probably there.
I don't see a scenario where you don't take Malrus. It's not initiative in, five.
Not with objectives.
Great objectives, right? Initiative five and a missile. And it's a 3-pointer. So by the time he's gone and burned through his two charges and whatever ordnance he's got, by that point, he's just a TIE fighter collecting points.
I want to know about Marcin's loss. What took them out of the running? Because we got three more of these. We're gonna bust through.
So we have a loss in round 3, 6, and 8, which is Chance, Scramble, and Chance. So the first two of the same being Chance.
Okay.
Those came to Jeremy Chambly in round 3 with the Genin Rack double bomber, which, funny enough, Marcin would come back the immediate game after and face Nathan Idy with the exact same list and win.
All right. Which, learn from your mistakes.
Yeah.
There you go. Got a practice match in.
Round three was chance. Round four was assault. So he lost the chance matchup against the rack, but won the assault against rack, which sounds weird, but it is notable to remember that Jeremy Chambly's list only has four ships.
Right.
The FO list has five, and there's a potential chance that some of the road roll timings worked in Marcin's favor for, say, of Kylo moving into jam. Helmax, he doesn't have the plasma to go off, so some things can change that matchup. And obviously, you said learn from the one you just lost from, instantly figured out maybe some options to change the approach.
Right.
The second loss was against the aforementioned Fruitcake Bat, aka Greg, in the FO versus FO matchup. That was the round six scramble loss, which kind of makes sense because I believe Fruitcake Bat had Von Reg and it's in scramble. So Von Reg has great ways to do chassis ability and then claim and still be able to be effective. And then also had, I think they both these lists had Midnight, right? Yes, they both had Midnight. Yeah. So they both had an I6, but Fruitcake Bat had two of them. And then his other loss came in round eight to Ken, who was running the Fen, Boudica, Keo, Holoc, and Luke Skywalker in Rebel. So he got his third loss in round eight and just played out the rest of his games to beat Rathos and Zach Bart. So still some pretty tough opponents in the last two, albeit I think there might have been a few players who found out as the time went on that once you get your third loss, you're very likely out of it. So don't know how many of them got a little more lax with it. Not to take away the victories, like good wins, right? Great players. But I think the competitive feel and level probably drops off once you get your third loss and gets into a little more like fun play X-Wing mode a little
bit. Sure. Still, made all the way to the 25th. They, all of these first order players really finished
also
strong.
Didn't play any resistance at all.
Really?
This purely just played against other First Order, Empire, and Rebel. Played against no Republic either. Literally just played against three factions out of 10 rounds. First Order, Empire, and Rebel. Marcin had a very narrow focused opponent pool.
I heard a
every day I'm shuffling.
There is someone in our Discord channel right now that has dropped by, hasn't been here for a long time.
Can you hear me now? Is this working?
I can hear him.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, I can only hear him once.
No, I think it's because he's on the ninja. He's not muted.
Oh, that's right. I've muted my ninja.
Is this better now? One audio now. All right, so we're going over words lists.
We're going over the first order.
Yeah, we went over the one scum list that made cut and did a little bit more of a deep dive of his matchups, how things went, the list overall, and now we're going through first order that didn't make the cut and trying to look at the list that were all 7-0-3 that were just barely missing the cut and maybe their paths, what they lost to, et cetera, et cetera.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I snuck away. I was allowed out of the composing dungeon. I figured I'd just come and say hi real quick. Cause I was listening.
You missed out on the Sherpa card. It was pretty exciting.
True.
Oh, that's a new card, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Well, yeah. Hopefully you can stay with us for a while here.
I mean,
I hope so. I hope you do.
It's my grandma's birthday, so it's her, happy birthday, grandma.
Happy birthday, grandma. Well, I think we are about to move on to our next list here. Let me see what we got pulled up.
Oh, we're on to Jack Johnson.
Okay, Jack Johnson.
Which was placement number 26.
Wow, These are really in order, it seems like.
I told you, they're all in. So, Dion, the funny thing was, all these FL lists that barely.
Will, you're muted.
I'm not muted at all.
No, it was muted.
I probably muted a little bit there, but.
So, all these FL lists that barely missed cut were within placement 21 to 31. After 31, the next FO list that shows up in the rankings isn't until 65. It's a really weird specific congregation of where they landed. Not making cut, but being like just out of it.
Okay. So it's the people who practiced and the people who didn't. That's what it sounds like.
I don't know. Wow. Basically just hold on. I know who the players are.
I'm not calling anybody out. I'm not calling anybody out. I'm just messing around. I don't know.
Because I know at 65 was Mr. Martin Shivers, who top forward at Sith Taker. And the immediate next FO list after that was Pierre Bouffier, who was number one in Swiss overall at Worlds last year. So
that's good. That's a good player. Very good player. Good.
Yeah.
My statements are retracted.
So you got Jack Johnson's list up?
Yes.
All right, do you want to read it, Dion?
I got it. Here we go. So we got the Ty Silencer, Kylo Ren. Silencer. That's a thick one. We got Malice, Sensor Scrambler, Outmaneuver, Plasma Torpedoes. Then we have, in the Ty BA, Major Von Reg, Lone Wolf for those rerolls, as long as you got nobody at range 0 to 2. Marksmanship, Mag Pulse Warheads for some crits. Deuterium Power Cells for some potential regen. Also, we got Hollow. In the BA as well, Proud Tradition, classic, with Deuterium Power Cells and Mag Pulse Warheads, and then capping it off with Commander Malrus in the FO, and not with Cluster Missiles, which a lot of people like to go with Malrus. This is another Mag Pulse Warhead, really leaning into that salvage, it would seem.
Yeah, triple Mag Pulse. Just I'm gonna neuter everything you have for as long as possible for Kylo to kill you, basically. Funny thing is, Crispy was flying this exact version up until about a month before Worlds, or basically when Endor came out. He also really liked the outmaneuver Plasma Torp with Malice. Like, just if you get out of arc of someone, that Plasma Torp hurts a ton because of the minus agility. But Crispy ended up swapping to the more Doug Howe version with the instinctive Proton Torpedo. Keeping Lone Wolf on Von Reg and going Predator on Kylo instead with advanced optics. We'll see that version of Doug's silencer later.
Well, that seems like a different approach, right? There's the sneaky version of Kylo versus I want to punch you in the face. Kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, the one that wants to get around you to do the big damage, and the other one that if you show up in my arc, I'm just gonna throw four dice no matter what, whether it's range one or range 2 to 3. But that hollow, Will, calling your name.
I know, a hollow makes it in here. Hollow and Malrus just paired together so well. Throwing strain at Malrus while they have their ability active really messes with target priority because your opponent obviously wants to shoot a strain ship. And especially in this list where Malrus is your tank, this is really triple ace. Plus, between the two BAs and the silencer here. So that is very interesting to me. Plus, as well, you have the double deuterium power cells. Always great to see Hollow and Von Reg both take the weapons disabled for a shield. And then Hollow slings that disabled over to Von Reg so that they can still fire. While that shift, thus obviously the second one doesn't do anything more than the first one did. So a lot of cool things you could do with Hollow there. Love to see them combined. No pattern analyzer, but maybe if you're running just a triple ace plus list like this, you do need to lean in and have more health because you know at some point they're going to find you and do damage to you. So you need to be able to have a way to counter that, and these BAs are leading into some extra shields. What about their losses here for Jack Johnson? What eventually took them out?
It looked very good as the 2 days progressed. His first loss wasn't until round five against Brendan Edwards, which round five was Salvage playing against a Empire list, which looks to be Vader, Merrick, I would assume Tolmax and Deathfire, and either Ferroth or Vizier in the Reaper. So 6-4-4-3-3. I mean, if you're facing Vader with in Salvage, that and if that other X1 is Merrick, it could have been Juno. I guess we'll just click the thing or find out. But either way, that's gonna be rough to hold on to boxes. And as we talked about in our game plan against FO, especially when it's just those four FO ships, you don't have that fifth one to help hang around a box. Maurus is probably the only one holding a box in that game and just hoping to hold on to it long enough. And then won every other game until losing both round 9 and 10. So went into round 9 being 7-1, only having to win one more game to guarantee themselves into top 16.
Big sad.
Yeah,
It's
that hurt.
very
Big
sad.
sad.
I mean,
you
it's
go
so
from just being on top of the world, you're like, I got it. You
That
lose the
seven and
first
one
one, now
high.
the pressure's on.
Yeah, well, round 9 was against a triple. It was against Mulfar with a triple Arc 170 Republic with a Torrent, a Z, and a Y-wing in assault. So, good luck. It's going to be rough because it's assault against triple Arc. And then his round 10 was against another Republic list, this time featuring double Arc Mace 2ZY, which I think we got that one on stream 2 in Top Cut, Will. I think that was
Mace, yeah.
Yeah, that was against Jeremy Chambly, right? The Mace ended up heightened perception
Oh yeah.
killing Jenden, I think.
Oh yeah. Well, destroyed his ship.
That...
He ejection pod out as always, but did destroy his ship.
But that round 10 was in Salvage. So with all those mag pulses, have a decent chance of knocking boxes off, but it's hard to tell all of those ships to have less, minus that attack power and jamming with the mag pulse, especially Mace in that matchup actually comes in pretty clutch with heightened perception, potentially guaranteeing a better shot at I7 instead of and shooting before some of those other ships in the FO squad. So it was looking pretty good. Looks like they mostly their face three Republic. Two of them were losses at the end. Faced only one Rebel with four T-65s and a TIE fighter, not a comp I'm used to seeing. Ended up facing one Resistance. Maui, I met Maui for the first time. He legit went for the Maui look. Like
Wow.
from Moana went like not no shirt, but like had a I'd say tribal, I guess, looking shirt. He went with the gimmick, I would say. And then also faced off against Joel Killingsworth too and beat him, who had Vader's Soontir triple bomber. He beat Doug Howe in round 7. He beat Jonathan Grasser in round 8. He faced some pretty high quality players across his day. So it's rough for Jack Johnson to lose his last two to not make cut, but I don't think he's got. I mean, it's rough you didn't make cut, but I think performance wise, I would be pretty proud if you if I was told after the event I would go through all that and beat the players I would have defeated in the matchups and whatnot.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like round 9 got to a lot of players here. It seems like that assault, especially when you only have limited ships.
Oh, just I mean, once we get to the final compilation of what rounds hurt these players the most, there are definitely two rounds that took out most of these players, and actually one round that took out none of these FO.
Just a quick shout out, Lambolo, dropping 15 subs in the chat. Had to make sure we give him a little
Oh,
shout out
dang.
there.
Lambolo,
Thank
always getting
you.
our back, helping us out. A grand Admiral
I blame
Patreon.
Dion. It's Dion's fault. He showed up. Dion's
That's
soothing
awesome.
voice, irresistible.
I have literally 1 minute left on my dungeon time, but
I'm glad you.
I'll be around.
Okay. Well, I mean, like I said, glad to have you, Dion. Good hearing your voice. Great seeing you over the world's weekend. But if you got to go, you got to go. We understand.
I got my Dion hug. I was happy.
All right. Well, we are moving in to Fan Lang again.
Long Lang.
Long Lang.
This is
placement 30.
Yep. This looks very familiar. It's it is the same list as the like 3 or 4 rounds ago, right?
Yep, it's the same list as Marsk and Mycheck.
Yeah. So yeah, it's exactly the same list. So it's the Quick Draw with Swarm Tactics and Fanatical, Fire Control System, the Commander Malrus with Cluster Missiles, Midnight, Crackshot, and Predator, Whirlwind getting boosted up with the Advanced Optics and Cluster Missiles. And again, the Advanced Optics and Cluster Missiles with Whirlwind is just pretty insane. I mean, that's really good, being able to just take two shots and essentially double modify both of them in a lot of situations. Real quick question, though, with the Proud Tradition and the Whispers, do they get to jam after that Proud Tradition,
no,
or is it they're already
no,
stressed,
they
right?
No,
it is yeah, a risky endeavor. Well, both ways. If they K-turn and mm-hmm. use the Proud side, they do not get it. It's not discount pattern analyzer. You
but
take
then
your
their
focus
has become...
But if it's ever flipped, crit, yeah, which is rare, but if it's ever mm-hmm. flipped, it's actually why I don't run the Proud Tradition on Whispers, because if someone ever flipped it, you lose out on your best action of your entire action bar, which is Focus Linked Jam. And yep. Focus Rotate yep. as well. Well, you lose out on both your things.
Yeah, you can't focus into anything after that point, because then all your focus actions are red. So that is a rough spot. But yeah, this is a... And you talk about how the combination and how good that Whirlwind can be when paired next to that Swarm Tactics Quick Draw. In my World's Prep game, I played Martin Shivers, who also played this exact list in Worlds. And I had a situation where I had to put Jess down before his Whirlwind, so you get to place Whirlwind after. And obviously, stuff wants to be next to Jess. So I put Jess down. He obviously kind of put Whirlwind across. I'm like, all right, Quick Draw is going to be somewhere near there. I'm just not going to put anyone near Jess. I'm going to ignore Jess's ability completely and just go put myself somewhere else. And it kind of worked. Sometimes, no matter how much you want to have your ships close up to each other, it's not worth it to opting into allowing that combination to be engineered so easily. In terms of our wins losses here, this one's a little more spread out here. Fan Longlong losing his first round to Brett Freeman, unfortunately, against the Rebel list. Looks like probably Wedge, Luke, Fen Rao, Sabine, Tai, and Keo would win next against Empire, would then lose the round 3 against a double arc Aether Sprite, I assume Anakin SOC, and a Z95, probably Mace, I would assume. We are used to seeing the Ada... Ada 2 arc, usually there's a third arc plus of another 4-point ship being the Padme version. This one shifts the points around. Might actually be something a little more expensive, or because if you go to a 5-point thing, your 3-point option should be available, but opted for a Z95, which could be a 3-pointer, a stub, or a killer, or it could be a 6-point 7B, or even a 5-point Ada instead of a 4-point Ada. Either way, so loss within the first 3 rounds can be really rough for any player. Fan would go on to win every single game up to round 10. His final loss came in round 10. He crawled all his way back to potentially make cut in the win and in game. And Jeremy Chambly ended up pulling out the victory with the Jendon Rack double bomber.
Wow. What do you think? What gives a four-ship empire list the advantage here? Is it...
That gen is really scary to any Whisper, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's like, fair.
If that proton cannon is shooting at a Whisper and it gets to keep a green token because it only had to like lock mod and the soft focus mod for the proton cannon, any Whisper is deathly terrified at that point.
Yeah, five dice, and it's probably happening the first engagement before you're close enough to put your gems on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be very easily a dead Whisper in one round.
And depending on road, right? There's a plasma coming from Tomax, maybe. There's Vader crew from Rack. There's a Deathfire bomb. Mm. So there's a lot of things to navigate, not letting chip damage show up on top of the proton cannon incoming from Jin. Fawn did end up playing round 9 against our previous former world champion, Nicholas God, who within the same bracket, Nicholas God would have gotten his third loss in round 9. To note, Nicholas God was running 2X, 2B, and Sabine Tai, so probably the custom Gina, the BOE, Braylon, Sabine, BOE Wedge, and Yavin.
Yeah, that checks out. That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Man, going... all the way. What was the round 8 and 9? Or sorry, round 9 and 10 objectives again? Assault and...
Assault and chance? No, salvage. 9 assault, salvage. 10 salvage.
Interesting.
One interesting note. So Fawn is one of the few FO players out of this group that we're talking about here that didn't play another single FO faction. He didn't play a faction battle. He just had a breakdown of 4 Empire, 2 Republic, and 1 Resistance.
Okay. Well, we got one more before we get out of here for the night. And that's, of course,
number 31, our boy Doug.
Doug.
Team America, Doug.
31, you said.
Yep, 31.
Okay. This is the same list they ran at the Las Vegas Open, which, of course, they won. Kylo Silencer with Instinctive, Lone Wolf, Advanced Optics, Proton. So it does need a lock and triple modifies their Proton Torpedo without a lock, which is pretty impressive. Proud, Heavy, Gaelic, Magpulse, Malorus, Barrage Rockets on LaHughes, and for the first time, a non-I5 or I6 three-pointer here, DT-798 with deuterium power cells, doing fake scorch or a 5 health, 3.3 agility ship. Wow. We need a second objective carrier, maybe the thing with 5 health on 3 agility. But yeah, obviously we've seen a lot of this. If you watched Las Vegas Open, Doug's been doing so great with this. This is also his XTC list he flew last year to great success. So he knows it up and down. But where did he find his struggles in the event, Ryan?
So he had a very similar look as Fawn Longalon, the gentleman we just talked about in the last player for FO. Lost round 1 to a resistance, looks like probably Poe Falcon, 9 Nub, Elo Snap would be my guess. Sure. Basically, Poe. It was Falcon plus triple T-70. It could have been Ray as well, I guess, not just Poe. And then would go on to win all the way up to round 7, would beat a Scum, 2 Rebel, a Republic, and another First Order. and then would lose, as aforementioned, Jack Johnson, who also was probably one of the only other Kylo Silencer players right there. So two of the Kylo Silencer players played each other. And then would beat... Yeah, why? Just let us play other people. would win round eight against Alex Farley, last year top cut player. Alex was running a Empire, looks like Rack, Tomax, Deathfire, Feroff, or Vizier, and Lareer. Would win against the Republic, and then would lose round 10, again, another winning in opportunity, against Octor Khan, running the Fenn, Keo, Luke, Wedge, Sabine, TIE Fighter. Again, that final round being a salvage.
Wow.
So,
I obviously played against a lot of good players, but...
Yeah, another... Interesting. I'll say it was very hard to avoid good players at Worlds if you made day two.
Well, that's fair. Gonna be honest with you, yeah. This is how she goes. But the Octo is flying new Wedge, but no B-Wings, is that right?
Correct. Yeah, I think that was the other common Rebel list, was going for the Fen Fang, Luke from Yavin, Endor Wedge, and then you have 5 points left to slot in some of the two best low-cost ships in the game, being Sabine TIE Fighter and Keo A-Wing.
Right. And maybe that... So I definitely could see that as a factor. Two I-6s out there against Doug's only I-5 squad.
Yep. He did say, leading up to Worlds, he was practicing, he was getting a little concerned of some of the other I-6... things coming from Endor, whether it was Jendin or Soontir or Wedge especially.
Right.
Wedge shows up with the Dalmat APT, can make anything on Doug's side of the board either really scared or even one-shot range, right? Like, you look at any of those TIE FOs, if they've taken any chip damage, they would need max amount of paint results on defense if he has a focus to even survive. Let alone maybe you have a chance to get one shot or put Kylo in really serious danger. So it looked like Doug's path. He didn't fight any Jendins. His only I-6s that he had to end up fighting were of the Rebel, or at least newer I-6s. Again, there's a chance he lost to a Poe Falcon instead of a Rey Falcon in round one.
Yeah.
Probably fought at least... It looks like he fought someone else in round four, brought this, it looks like to be close to, if not the same list as Octor Khan brought in round 10. So it's not like he didn't face any I-6s. There's a Von Reg he faced in there as well, from another FO. So there was a mix. I know Milkman, a.k.a. find his name. He's an NCX. He's the captain of the Mega Milk team. He was running 7B Anakin, which could... be really difficult to deal with for Kylo too, because he's just as maneuverable. So, but yeah, another almost made it, didn't win round 10 situation, which, if we transition to what were the most detrimental rounds for all these FO players, and what was the least detrimental round, all of these FO lists won round 4. Not a single one of them lost round 4, and that's Assault, by the way. Which we talked about may not have been their best scenario, but all these FO lists won round 4. Now the killers were both salvage rounds. Salvage in round 5 claimed Fruitcake Bat, Kester, Jack Johnson, and Doug Howe, and then round 10 claimed Max, a.k.a. Chung Chung, Jack Johnson, Fon Longalon, and Doug Howe. So Salvage was the killer for these FO lists, which sounds weird because we always think like, oh, they have crit mechanics via the mag pulses around. They have solid carry. They have at least one solid carrier with Malrus, but maybe not more than Malrus as a solid carrier. But yeah, That's the patterns I noticed. Every other round, there was only two players that lost. But round four, all of them won. Round five, four of them lost. And round 10, four of them lost. Those were the two killers. The end of both days. Maybe too much brain power in those early rounds was used on flying those FO lists. And it was just too much to handle by round five of each day.
I can believe it. I was just poking through some of our insights here. Unsurprisingly, 80% had a whisper, and 100% of FO list had the tie FO. It is the kind of their signature ship.
The so. Malrus. How many of them didn't have Malrus?
Just the.
You can actually find that out.
No, even. Even the one we looked at that had the four ship that broke the molt went 7553.
There was one list. There was at least one list Mauer's wasn't in, because looking at the numbers, it's Mauer's frequency or how often they were in an FO list in the pilot section was at 97.5%. So there was at least one FO list that didn't bring Mauer's.
What's the chances they just don't have a list? I guess, are you still first order? I guess it just, I don't know if it knows if you're first order if you don't have a list in there. But
yeah, I did first order by count and pilots, and I've also in the composition section did first order by count. And the composition's kind of interesting to look at too, because you can see like what are the ones that have a higher percentile, the ones closer to that top cut. And that composition in rank spot number two at that 65.43% percentile, and that third spot at 59.29%. When you filter by count for first order, I guess, because there's a lot of varying lists. I will say, the most common list was only brought seven times in first order. I'm assuming that's the Von Reg, Wylo, Malrus, Lacuse, and probably Midnight. A lot of people opted into Midnight. As you said, there wasn't a lot of DT or Scorches.
Nope. That was the most popular
list archetype. But it looks like the most successful list archetype with a decent amount of numbers, not being one of or two of a list, was actually the Swarm Tactics Quick Draw Whisper, or the Whirlwind one. That showed up six times and had an average placement of around 35th, because basically you take the percentile, take the number 100, subtract the percentile, which is 65.43. I'll just round it to say it's 65. So 100 minus 65 is 35. So the average placement of that list in this event was 35th, which much closer than a lot of the other percentiles being taken at that count rate. Like, still a six counts low, but this is only in one single event. Sure. Technically, if we look at all first order and filter by percentile, best performing one was Kester Smith's triple whisper. But it's only one of, right? Like only the only one person who brought it.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. The second best was the Kylo Silencer Malrus Hollow Von Reg, which was brought by Jack Johnson and I know Crispy. They just had varying upgrades on that Kylo Silencer. Right. We know, I think if I recall Crispy, he ended up, I think 6-4. So still day two winning record, high percentile.
Yeah, that is so interesting. I mean, because we, to be able to just take a snapshot at the top 16 and be like, oh, FO's trash. They didn't even get into the top 16. But yet to see
there
them.
There was at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of the seven lists we just got done talking about got their final losses in either round, 5 out of the 7 that we talked about got their final losses in round 9 or 10. Most of these were in it till almost the very end. And the people who didn't lose in round 9 or 10 lost in either a large chunk where Kester Smith did 5, 6, 7 in a row where he started 4-0, or Marcin, who was didn't only lost in round 6 and 8. So not very few of these players lost early. And if they did, like Fawn Longline did in round 1 and 3, he made it all the way to the potential winning in round 10 and just lost it there. Lots of heartbreak in First Order right now. Hearts crushed all over under the Supreme Leader.
It seems like it. Marcel, why do you think that is? Why do you think they... why they couldn't cross the finish line, if you will?
I just think it takes a lot of luck. I mean, things have to fall into place. Even, you know, the two winners or the two finalists had to go through a road ruling just Sunday alone. So honestly, it's just a lot of luck. Now, if you were talking about like glaring weaknesses, I think one of the terrible matchups, which Crispy says is not a bad matchup for his specifically, but I think in general, one of the terrible matchups for them is the assault against three arcs. It's just...
Just not even assault, yeah. Just three arcs in general.
Well, three arcs in general, but specifically assault, because even with the other ones, you've got like... you've got pieces that can go and press buttons and still have like some type of modifier, whether it's Lone Wolf or that free target lock from moving. So there's ways to, I think chance engagement is probably their strongest, just because they are very defensive and they hold on to their points well as aces. But assault, like, you've got 4 or 5 ships, they're all small bays, and it's not like, you can't be cagey, you can't press, you've got to stick around, and the arcs and the rest of the squads, like, they know where to point, like, you're going to be somewhere right there.
Yeah, and
easy to just get in the hole, like, in the first 2-3 rounds and be down, you know, like 4-1 or something like that, just with the assault objectives. You were saying, right?
Yeah, I will note, so assault, while I said round 4, none of these FO lists lost, which was assault, but also in the other 2 rounds of assault during Worlds, Hester lost round 7, Chung Chung, aka Max, lost round 7. And in round 9, Root Cake, Bad AK, Greg, and Jack Johnson lost. So no FO list lost assault twice out of the whole world's event. I think what's key to remember is if you're not facing stuff like Triple Arc, FO really likes to make sure their actions are available to them to be used for their own ship, offensively or defensively. When they don't have to press buttons or pick up boxes, they can enact their plans generally as they need to. Just with assault, they need to shift maybe the vectors or positions where it happens. So I think assault may be better for FO than we thought originally.
That checks out. I mean, they very similar to Empire, where their actions are so powerful that quote unquote wasting their actions on scenarios is a lot more detrimental. It seems like, so in the future, looking more towards Scramble and Towing.
Yeah, it looks like, weakness. By the results, Salvage was their worst. Assault was their best. And Scramble was the second best, because the only other round 2 of these players didn't lose was round two, where only Chung Chung, aka Max, lost in round two for Scramble. Everyone else won that Scramble round two. So there was a... And obviously we had a decent variety in these FO lists, mainly in what type of 5-5-4-3-3 it was. But as we saw, Doug Howe showing up with his Silencer Kylo LeHughes 3-3-3, and then Jack Johnson running the Kylo Silencer Hollow Von Reg Malrus 4-ship version. Two outliers over the normal 5-5-4-3-3.
Right. Still, impressive and fascinating to see why and how so many of these First Order players just missed it. A lot of their bubble bursted, if you will, in the final rounds of Swiss. Still, all those players did an excellent job. And 10 games against these world-class competitors is a gauntlet of X-Wing to go through. So, it was Greg. Greg ended up being the best FO overall by the narrowest of margins.
Very, very close SOS score. An SOS of 1.98, so almost a 2 SOS, which is generally pretty high. Kester Smith barely behind him at 0.8944.
Oof. So all these players battling it out, like I said, for that. Because top FO was a prize, so that's... If you're wondering why, like... Why they play game 10 or why they play the rest of day 2 or whatever. Other than came to play X-Wing. There was something on the line for all of these FO players. But.
Well, and again, for most of these technically, for a majority of these FO players, there were four of them that had win in opportunities in round 10. So
really? So we could have had four. Just as easily as zero in the top 16. Yep.
Wow. When it came to the start of round 10, there was a chance that Chung Chung, aka Max, Jack Johnson, Fon Longalon, and Doug Howe could have all made it in. We could have had four FOs in the top 16 and subtract whoever they lost to out.
Wow.
Well, crazy, well. Different timeline.
Well. This has been... an interesting dive into the results of Worlds. Of course, we're going to be talking about Worlds. We're going to be talking list breaks. We're going to do list breakdowns. Hopefully, we get a bunch of interviews. We're going to talk shop with these players. What got them to the final table? Well, I want to be on the final table. Or in the top 4 or the top 8 or whatever next year. How can I do that? So hopefully, we can get some insight on them in the future episodes. Of course, if you're watching or listening later on, we're always here on Monday on Twitch. You can check out the video version of the podcast on YouTube normally later in the week, Tuesday or Wednesday or so. Wednesday we do stream on Twitch as well, and catch me and James hanging out playing some games of X-Wing. And of course, we are looking to start scheduling the next season, but we're waiting, obviously, a little early for that. So we're waiting to hear more information, but for now, like I said, you can check us out on the Twitch or YouTube. Anything I missed before we round up the wagons or whatever, and leave?
No,
yeah, I think we're both bedtime mind right now.
Bedtime. That sounds great. Oh, well, it's been an exciting journey for this podcast, but time is coming to end. So for everybody here at Gold Squadron, stay safe, Stay smart. Gold Squadron out.
Thank you to ISO, Danko, Baffle, Trojan, Prophet, Shadow, Tycho, Spice, Raider, Lancer, Fallen, Row 6, 626, Chief, and J-List, our Grand Admiral patrons. And all of our Gold Squadron patrons and community members, thank you for your support. Gold Squadron out.